This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop. Because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Beasley swings it in! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Boyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, this is a jam-packed show tonight on the heels of Fred and AJ and the Blitz. Today's Champions League results and drama. On the docket, Joan Laporta back at Barcelona. How is he going to deal with restructuring the fame club with a $1.76 billion debt? How about that? Sell Messi? Is Messi interested in being a part of a restructure both on and off the field? And what about Ronald Koeman? He's done an admirable job. Manchester Derby talk. Edinson Cavani. Some news on him about wanting to go back to South America. A bold proposition in Austin. I'm going to explain that to you. And as always, we stream at ESPN975.com. 713-780-3776 is the call-in number tonight. So, Aaron, tomorrow PSG and Kylian Mbappe with a 4-1 first-leg victory over Barcelona play in Paris against Barcelona. And sick PSG fans have held up a Shakira prostitute banner ahead of the Champions League match tomorrow. Man, what did Shakira ever do to them? You know, you got to say, family and wives, and that's got to be out of the picture, don't you think?
Is that his wife?
Piqué's. Gerard Piqué plays for Barcelona, and Shakira is his wife.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, they should be off limits, but you know fans. Fans know no bounds. They're crazy. Yeah. That's kind of why the sports exists, because they go all in, and you know, every now and then they're going to cross a line.
How much of that do we hear in the NFL and NBA?
Oh, plenty. You know, when a star quarterback gets hurt, people on his team that either think that he should be there, or people in the opposing teams will say, oh, well, you know, good, you deserve to be hurt. You're a horrible person because you don't play for my team, or you don't make my team as good as I want them to be. People are crazy sometimes, especially over sports.
Yeah, we live in a beautiful world, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
People are just so nice. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
People forget to take a deep breath and realize it's a game.
Yeah, a lot of people have come to Shakira's defense in this. Well, I think there's a lot of people that just they can't live without degrading, denigrating, taking somebody down. You know, they can't go a day without doing something divisive to somebody else. But anyway, I thought this one was a little over the top, especially since PSG's got a 4-1 lead on aggregate in the first leg. So anyway, what did Shakira ever do to them? Come on, knock it off, PSG fans. All right. 713-780-3776 is the number. Again, I said streaming at ESPN975.com. 713-780-3776. Tonight, I'm also going to dig into the Dynamo preseason with new signing, Maxi Arruti. You're going to like this interview. We take the biggest piece of the puzzle, though, now, around the Houston Dynamo in my mind, and that is getting the midfield right. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Todd Ramos has added resources there, but how will they get a hold of the middle third of the field where really it is a platform for so much? So we are on the air tonight. And we will also have on the show, and this is a really, really good interview. It's from the city of Manchester. It's all about Manchester United and Manchester City, if you're part of those supporters groups here in Houston or around the country or the world. And we will have Tyrone Marshall of the Manchester Evening News on. He is excellent. A lot of guys that are writers, and I think you probably know this as well, Tyler, a lot of guys that write ask to be on radio shows or, you know, want to get out there because, you know, it's natural. They want to get their writing out there. Some of them are absolutely horrible on the radio. Tyrone Marshall is exceptional. And you'll get so much information in this interview tonight. A lot of interesting stuff in and around both Manchester United and Manchester City, what the reaction is like on the ground in the city of Manchester. So really looking forward to that. All right, today, Porto advance over Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus in the Champions League. They summon their superhero qualities. Juve's knocked out. And this happened under amazing circumstances. So Juventus won today 3-2. The aggregate ended 4-4. And because of the road goals, Porto advances in dramatic fashion. Now, they had to do it with 10 men after Mehdi Taremi got sent off in the 54th minute. Now, what I want to recall here and put in context is how good Porto was in the first leg in Portugal. Outplayed for 90 minutes, Juventus, in a big way. Pressing game, alive, created the better chances. Should have really left there with a three-goal advantage and then concede a road goal. So that made it very dicey going back to Turin. First half, Juventus comes out, gets a chance. It's countered with Porto getting a chance. It's a great game. And by the way, I love Porto's manager, Sergio Conceição. I loved him as a player when he played in the Serie A. So it was great to see him get, you know, maybe the biggest win of his coaching career, certainly in Europe. And all of a sudden in the second half, Juventus comes out, Federico Chiesa, Enrico Chiesa's son, the former Parma and Fiorentina player, comes out, scores a great goal. He's been very good for Juventus. Then the sending off. And now all of a sudden it's just, you know, it's Juventus under assault and you're going, my gosh, this has just turned on a dime here. Something that was in very much control for Porto has now just turned and, you know, you're starting to get the sense that Juventus is going to advance today. They fight like warriors. First half, Porto got a penalty in the 19th. Sergio Oliveira scores it. 49th minute, Chiesa ties it. 54th, Taremi sent off. Juventus now has energy. 63rd, Chiesa again. It's all tied on aggregate. And then Sergio Oliveira in the 115th minute. They go to extra time. The wall for Juventus. It jumps all over the place. Ronaldo jumps up. It goes underneath the wall and in. Ronaldo turns its back. It looks like a wall that's constructed at a youth soccer game. In fact, I'm flying over to Juventus and Turin. I'm going to meet them there tomorrow. We're going to work on setting up walls properly. Because walls are designed in soccer to eliminate possibility, not add to it. Rabiot scores late. 4-4. Road goals. Guess who's through? Porto. Fantastic. So let's go to the phone lines. Martin wants to talk Juventus.
Hey, what's up, Glenn?
Hi, Martin. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah, you know, I didn't get to see the Juventus-Porto game. You know, I was working, and but I saw some of the highlights, and it looked like it was a really good game. That wall at the end, just ridiculous. But, you know, I'm sure you probably get this a lot, and I don't want to go off topic, but, you know, I posted right after the game, I posted on my Facebook, you know, is it time for an MLS team to, you know, or is it time for Cristiano to come on over to the other side of the pond And I got a lot of bash from several people, you know, telling me he needs to wait 4 more years. Another person told me, you know, to his 40. And it's fine and all. I'm pretty sure a lot of people will still see him at that age. But, I mean, I've never liked hearing the MLS as a retirement league. And, you know, as much as Ronaldo may be, an attraction, even at 40, you know, I think the best time for the MLS team, you know, is to call them over. And if they wait, you know, I don't think they should wait to call that guy over. But, you know, it's just my two cents. And I love the show, Glenn, and I'll just hang up and listen.
All right, Martin, thank you very much. Well, look, I don't think there's any question. He's been linked to Inter Miami and David Beckham. You know, he's a guy who's going to either be a Miami guy or an L.A. guy, if in fact he wants to come. I think he will play into his 40s, barring any serious injury. This guy is a remarkable athlete. He was, by the way, they dulled the sword of Ronaldo. He was really a non-factor for Juventus in this tie against Porto. Defended him beautifully in the first leg, defended him well today for the most part. Not effective. And, you know, they've got people are talking about, you know, is this the right team? And, you know, remember, he was brought there to Juventus to win the Champions League. And they're also, not that they're out of the Serie A race, but they're not favorites right now. Inter Milan are favorites now. And now Juventus will be able to focus more on the Serie A and the chase for the Scudetto and trying to get back into it with Inter Milan now that they're out of the Champions League. And Inter Milan probably was hoping they were going to go on to keep them occupied. But Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi, always get linked to Major League Soccer. I am sure people have reached out to him. I am sure people have reached out to his agent and would love to see him come to America at some point. It's a whole different ballgame if he comes to your club and your team. So we'll see. But my gut tells me, you know, unless this is such a frustrating year that he jumps on coming to America, yes. But Major League Soccer, it can be a retirement league for someone like him just because of his stature. But on the other hand, you still have to be able to play. It's a very physical, athletic league, as we know. There's quite a bit of travel, unlike Europe. There's obviously... you know, some matches have to be played on artificial surface. We know some players that wouldn't play on it. So there are the challenges, but I don't think there's any question. Quality of play in the league is up. That's due to the initial more investment in rosters and buying players now younger. So it's not considered that so-called quote-unquote retirement league. It's one of the top 7-8 leagues in the world. I don't think there's any question now. It's right up there. So I appreciate that phone call, Martin. But again, this holy wall was built by Ronaldo and his teammates. And honestly, it looked like something you'd see at a youth soccer game with kids that did not yet get taught how to build a proper wall. And again, walls are built to eliminate possibility. So when this wall jumps, you are giving the option to Oliveira to go underneath the wall. More of a direct line to goal. If you have to go up and over the wall, a goalkeeper, I think, has a better chance of making a save and getting there. I think there's just that little bit more time. But we should ask that question to... one of the goalkeepers. Maybe we'll ask Marco Maric that the next time he's on the show. Weston McKennie came on in the second half. Dortmund today advanced 5-4 in aggregate after a 2-2 draw with Sevilla. Who else but Erling Haaland with 2 goals for Dortmund. Now, Haaland is being linked to both teams in Manchester. My gut is probably City. Haaland becomes the fastest player to 20 goals in the Champions League as well as the youngest. So that's a pretty remarkable stuff right there. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in. Manchester Derby. I don't know if you watched it. It was an interesting match. United came out very aggressive after some very passive games and poor games. Get a penalty 38 seconds in. Martial draws it. A silly foul from a striker. We call it a striker's foul. Gabriel Jesus. Bruno scores off the penalty. 1-0 United. 15 minutes in, United still keeping City out of their rhythm. They're compact. They're getting good pressure on the ball. They're alive. They're engaged. They're emotionally connected. Something that we hadn't seen in prior games. And then, you know, 18, 20 minutes in, City start to find a rhythm, start playing the game in the United half of the field. But that said, Manchester United was set up in a really good block in a 4-2-3-1, essentially five midfielders. And I think the game plan and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer deserves a lot of credit for the tactics here. Defended narrow, elected to give more up out wide, elected to deal with crosses to Raheem Sterling and Gabriel Jesus. It kept Maguire and Lindelof together. So they looked like world beaters at center backs because they were defending deeper and they had a lot of players around them as opposed to being in an open field and having a lot of space behind them. But United was struggling in around the 20th to 30 minutes. Period there. And you thought City was going to produce. They didn't, but City was suffocating United at the end of the half. Second half, United get an incredible counterattack goal from Luke Shaw. Manchester City's producing some great passages of play, some ridiculous stuff in tight areas. They hit a post. But you can see now they are looking very, very vulnerable on the counterattack. Martial had a great chance to make it 3-0, and I'm going to talk about him in a little bit because of the fact that this was one of the best games I've ever seen him play. But the fighting spirit never dropped in this game for United. That warrior mentality, that fight never left them, and I think that's a prerequisite for playing City. But the tactics of defending narrow, brilliant. The tactics of making a personnel choice, for whatever the reason, putting Dean Henderson in goal, fantastic. Because if you know you're going to deal with more crosses, you need your better goalkeeper off his line. That's him. Enough moments on the counterattack, certainly. United has self-belief. Anthony Martial was exceptional coming back to the ball and holding play up on this day. Holding play up so that his team could get a bit of a rest. It was a vital job that he had to do, and he pulled it off. So a lot of props to Anthony Martial. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk some Manchester United, Manchester City with Tyrone Marshall of the Manchester Evening News interview you're not going to want to miss. Big thank you to John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They are the presenting sponsors of this show. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to give you a personalized approach. They'll do it for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Any kind of accident you get in, call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. The other thing is they support soccer. They support your game, football. Support the sponsors that support your game. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. Alpine Stars take you to break.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
Well, we talked last week about the greatest intro music in rock and roll. You can also give me a shout on that, too, 713-780-376. 713-780-ESPN, giving the dog a bone, AC/DC. Or hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. I'd love to know what your favorite rock intros are. There's so many good ones out there. It's off the charts. I mean, people were coming up with good ones last week. We had Derek and the Dominoes, Layla, all kinds of stuff. I mean, numerous Zeppelin songs, numerous... Van Halen songs, numerous Stones songs, all kinds. 713-780-3776. All right, I think it's that time now.
Game on, man.
Here's Glenn Davis.
Game on.
With Game On for 90.
Game on, game on.
All right, we're on the clock here. Now, it's no secret that the Austin Bold, who play in the USL Championship, and owner Bobby Epstein have not taken kindly to Austin FC over the last few years. The relationship is strained. The Austin Bold wanted, much like San Antonio FC, to be the MLS entrant in Central Texas, in the Austin area, the San Antonio area. Well, in came the former Columbus Crew, rebranded as the Austin FC under Anthony Precourt. So recently, the Bold put out through a social media account on Twitter an open challenge to take on Austin FC. Now remember, Austin FC is preparing for their first season. Brand new, incredible stadium, putting their roster together, new coach, sporting director. They challenge them to a preseason match. Now this was done, I believe, without reaching out to the organization, without reaching out to Austin FC. Strictly done through social media. And yes, it was spiced up with ticket proceeds going to charity. That's a great thing. Beer involved for supporters groups and a minimum of $100,000 in proceeds guaranteed. That's great. It's all fine and well. But what does Austin FC have to gain here, really? Absolutely nothing. They will not touch this with a 10-foot pole, I believe. They're preparing for their first season. The last thing they want to do is get in a local turf war with the Austin Bold, and they're going to want to maintain the focus without getting into a feud. All to gain for the Bold, who will be happy to get the run of social media. Maybe it'll happen down the road. Pretty interesting what people will do, what clubs will do. I don't know. Maybe you think that's brilliant marketing by the Austin Bold because it got a rise out of people. I don't know. I think it's going to go away. 713-780-3776 is the number tonight. 713-780-3776. Big day tomorrow for the officials here in Houston meeting with FIFA to discuss the 2026 FIFA World Cup. So the bid committee is on a phone call. A lot of it's going to be around Energy Stadium. Yeah, it's really hard with FIFA to understand what some of the criteria is. So is it possible Houston and Dallas both get to host World Cup matches? Monterrey, Mexico is going to get it. Dallas had it in 94. Dallas has got the Hunt family, who's certainly from a political standpoint all in. We've had great attendance at international matches here. We have an amazing soccer community. So you sell all these other things, the amount of money that can be brought in. You know, we've got that amazing spirit that has responded over the years. I heard Chris Kennedy in a video citing those things. Those are all 100% accurate, good things we have. The one thing I have not heard, nobody talks about the impact having World Cup games, hosting World Cup games in Houston could have. And I'm going to just start with just our Houston and surrounding area, the impact it can have on youth, You think about that indelible moment when you went and saw the game of your life that you'll never forget. You know, for me, it was the Netherlands and West Germany. And I wasn't even in Germany. I was in Madison Square Garden with 18,000 Dutchmen and Germans. I never forget it. It was a platform moment. Imagine how many kids can be talking about going to a World Cup match 20 years after. In 2046, hey, I remember when my dad took me down to Energy and I got to see Brazil, or I got to see the United States, or I got to see Mexico, or I got to see Spain. Unbelievable. But the run-up to this thing, we need more talk about the competitive side, what it can do for youth soccer here, what it can do for everybody that's involved in the game in Houston, what it can do to influence mainstream media down here. Mainstream media, if we get the World Cup, is on board no matter what. because they'll see something they've never seen before. And you can talk Super Bowl all you want. This will be something you have never seen. We need more people talking about what the 2026 World Cup can do when it comes to igniting the passion of young people, young soccer fans, providing that moment that leads them into a lifelong love affair with this incredible sport that reaches deep into our soul. We need more of that. We need more people in Houston talking about the passionate side of the game, that have a passion for it, where it burns, where they're waking up every day thinking about it. So that's a fringe benefit of having those games. It's also a fringe benefit of heightening up the competitive side, the players, the great teams that are going to be coming here, the incredible moments that fans are going to have, the pomp and circumstance, supporters groups, the color, the diversity, all these things that will make it an off-the-chart event. Oh, yes, and a lot of people will make money. We do know that. We do know that. Plus, there'll be a lot of people coming into Houston from all over the world. 100 to 200,000 people will be descending in here, maybe more. It's a remarkable opportunity. And it would add to the list that the Sports Authority has garnered over the years, doing the great job that they do, bringing in big events to Houston. So let's hope that 6 a.m. call goes well. I can assure you I won't be on it. I'm interested to hear what's said about Energy Stadium, but a lot doesn't get out around this stuff. It's very under a veil of secrecy, very FIFA-like. All right. German FA announced that Yogi Löw is going to step down after the Euros this summer. Don't forget, Euros this summer. Edison Cavani's father told the publication Super Football that his son is unhappy at Manchester United. There are talks with Boca Juniors and Juan Roman Riquelme for Edinson Cavani to come down to Argentina. 7 goals in 25 games for him. He's had a lot of injury problems. Doesn't seem like he's having the best of times in the city of Manchester. Thomas Tuchel, Christian Pulisic needs to have patience is what he's saying. He likes him off the bench. Played 3 minutes at the end of the game against Everton. You know, it was kind of one of those things where you're almost embarrassed to go on the field. I mean, what's he going to do, you know, 3 minutes at the end versus Everton? And by the way, first thing he did when he came on the field was sprint at somebody, and he got himself right into the game. Pulisic showed no. He showed no sign of moping. He's only played 134 out of a possible 810 minutes since Tuchel took over. All right, I'm hearing Shaggy. And when you hear Shaggy, that means it's a commercial break. So we're going to come back with Manchester United and City talk with Manchester Evening News' Tyrone Marshall. Looking forward to this, and I think you will too. Okay, Shaggy will take us to break. And this break is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, bilingual. Hit him up at DaspitLaw.com, or you can also call him. They are bilingual. It's real simple. All you got to do is call 713-322-HURT. We'll take a break. Girl, you're my angel. You're my darling
angel. Closer than my peeps. ESPN. 97.5.
I'm Vlatko Andonovski, the coach of U.S. Women's National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on each and every night. This show is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They are bilingual. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, John and his firm, they will take your case, and they will work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. DaspitLaw.com. And we appreciate John and his firm's ability to help get soccer on the airwaves and to allow us to do interviews like this. We go over to Manchester in the UK. We bring on senior football writer Tyrone Marshall, who has been on this show before, and we appreciate having him on tonight as well. Tyrone, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Glenn.
Super to have you on again. We always appreciate your insight because you're on the ground there. You're involved each and every day covering football in the great city of Manchester. How about just the mood of the city now that Manchester City went down to Manchester United?
I suppose it's an interesting one for both clubs, really, in that City fans will be disappointed that their chance of breaking that world record of wins has gone, and disappointed at losing a derby, but they know they can console themselves with the fact they're going to win the Premier League. I don't think that will change anything in that regard. United fans have the bragging rights from the weekend, another sign of progress under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but I think there'd be an underlying feeling for United fans that this should have meant more. This should have been a game that could have decided the title race. Instead, they've had a terrible run from going top on January the 12th. They won three of the next 10 Premier League games, and it meant that really they were playing for bragging rights and to get back into second place at the weekend rather than making it a title decider. So I think over 90 minutes, it was a great result for United. It was fantastic for all their supporters, but I think underlying there'd be a sense of frustration as well.
So position this in the future. I think United fans were pretty disappointed with some of the effort, the edge coming out in games, certainly running up to this against Manchester City. They came out very alive. I think we have to be impressed with what they did from an engagement standpoint for the course of 90 minutes. How much of this, though, goes down to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and defending narrow and forcing the game wide against City and you know, being pretty compact after getting that early penalty?
Yeah, very much. It was a tactical triumph for Solskjaer again. And he's proved himself capable of these one-off tactical triumphs time and again, really, in his time at United. I mean, they won three of the four derbies last year. They've won again here. They've won three games in a row at the Etihad in 15 months. I mean, that's an incredible record against Manchester City and a City managed by Pep Guardiola. So, you know, there's no doubt Solskjaer has proved that even against the best managerial minds, he can do it. He's had wins over Thomas Tuchel at PSG, against Ancelotti at Everton, against Nagelsmann at Leipzig this season. So, you know, in one-off games, he has undoubtedly proved he can come up with a plan. And we've seen that plan kind of develop. This was a different win to the wins at the Etihad last year, where it was very much backs to the wall, based around counter-attacking. Obviously, the early goal helped on Sunday, but second half, it felt like they controlled large parts of the game in the second half. And, you know, they didn't just attack on the counter, they built attacks and built pressure. And it was a real noticeable sign that the game plan had kind of moved on from last season. So, you know, I think it was a triumph for Solskjaer. I think the challenge now for United is they've proved they can do it over 90 minutes against anyone in the league, but they need to do it over 38 games because City have changed what it takes to win the Premier League. You need to win 30, 32 of your 38 games. And at the moment, United don't have the consistency to do that.
He's a senior football writer for the Manchester Evening News, Tyrone Marshall, joining us. Okay. In defense of, in addition to what you just said there, I thought Anthony Martial had one of his best games I've ever seen him play. And I would just say simply because of the day, the opponent, and the importance of him just holding play up and allowing Manchester United to get a bit of a breather at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And it came out of nowhere, really. Martial's been fairly poor this season, really poor recently. Been a lot of sort of question marks over his ability to fulfil that role as centre-forward long-term. I think United hoped bringing Edison Cavani in would allow him to learn off Cavani, but also rise to the challenge. But he shrunk in the face of that challenge, really. And, you know, when Cavani picked up an injury on Saturday in training and United fans saw Martial was starting, I think there was a lot of pessimism about it. But he did have a really good game and he looked confident. And it felt to me like it almost just clicked in winning that penalty in the first 40 seconds. And it was like that just sort of gave him that boost and that spark of confidence. And after that, he was fantastic. The one downside is he should have scored. Certainly his second half chance when he was one-on-one with Edison, he should have scored that. But his all-round play was brilliant. He was United's best attacker. I think there was a moment in the second half where he burst forward with pace and I think Rodri and John Stones tried to stop him and he just threw them both off. And it was the kind of strength and purpose you don't normally see from Martial. So it was a really good performance from him. Most unexpected as well, given his recent form. But I don't think it will silence the doubts at the moment. I think he has to be doing that on a much more consistent basis and a much more regular basis. If he can do that, then he's definitely got a future at United as a number nine. But I think there's still a few doubts at the moment that probably won't be silenced over one good performance.
All right, let's go back to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because obviously this is an incredibly pressure-filled job that most of us don't realize the extent it goes to being the manager of Manchester United. But look, he's been maligned by his teammates in the past that he's not the right guy for the job. You know, it kind of goes up and down with their consistency problems. Should Ole be here? You know, he constantly preaches time, patience. Hey, we've got a tremendous amount of youth coming through now. It bodes well for the future. His job's not in danger, is it?
No, I don't think it's in danger at all, really. I think, you know, he's done enough now to be as safe as houses this summer. I think, if anything, he's probably likely to get a new contract, given he'll only have a year left. You know, the team have undoubtedly made progress under him from where they were when he took over. And, you know, progress may have been a little bit slower than some supporters would like. And I think it's probably going to remain relatively slow, purely because of the impact of the pandemic on finances. You know, we said not so long ago that consistency is the issue, and doing these 90-minute performances needs to be over a full season. The only way you'll get there is if you build a squad as strong as City's. And to do that, United probably need another three or four signings at £200-£250 million, and that simply isn't going to happen this summer. So I think progress will still not be as quick as some might like, but there certainly has been progress. There's always been doubts about him, and I think, you know, part of that is because if he wasn't Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and didn't have his history at United, then on his CV, he wouldn't have been anywhere near that job in the first place when it became available. And we don't know. Managing Mulder and Cardiff is completely different to managing Manchester United. It's like he's been learning on the job, and we've been finding out about him as well as the players as time has gone on. But, you know, he certainly proved that he's up to it. He's dealt with the pressure well. His man management is good. He's improved players there. So, you know, I think his job is as safe as houses. And if they do finish second this season, then you've got to say that's another season of real progress.
Tyrone Marshall, senior football writer of the Manchester Evening News here. So you've been close to him. You know, press conferences, you've watched him from day one since he got the job. What have you seen just from him as far as becoming more confident? You know, you've seen the change subtly. Take us into that a little bit, because that's something we may not be able to see on the outside.
Yeah, I think he's grown personally in belief in what he's doing, in his understanding of the role. I think he's probably realised that, I think he's toned down his kind of nostalgia talk since he first got the job. You know, when he first got the job, he used to play up his relationship with Sir Alex Ferguson, his time at the club, an awful lot. And I think, you know, when they were doing really well in his first 3 months, I think fans loved that. But when they started to struggle, I think it became a little bit wearying and a little bit, you know, trotting out the same old nostalgia lines. And I think undoubtedly he's toned that down. I think he's more in tune with supporters now. And I think he's shown that he's got the ability to make big decisions and treat players fairly ruthlessly. In his first summer, you know, he let Sanchez go, he let Lukaku go. And he got rid of some fairly big players in the interest of having a squad that was more united and more in unity, really. And, you know, he's not been afraid to take a risk in terms of letting players go. United would have undoubtedly been better with Lukaku than without him last year, given they had to sign Ighalo in January. But Solskjaer could see for long term that was the right decision to do. And I think he's always made decisions with the interest of United rather than his own interest at heart, and has backed himself that the owners and progress will mean that he will get the chance to benefit from that rather than someone else. But I think that, you know, there's no doubt he is growing into the role. I think he's a lot more combative in press conferences now, willing to take on other managers. And I think he certainly feels more at home. It helped that he knew how the club worked. But like I say, he's definitely toned the nostalgia down. And I think that's helped his cause as well.
You brought up the name Romelu Lukaku. And obviously we're watching him along with Lautaro Martinez. You know, these guys are a wrecking ball as a pair in the Italian Serie A. They're likely going to lead Inter Milan to their first Scudetto in many, many years. Can you give us a little more insight into Lukaku's leaving? Because how much of that was his desire to move on from Manchester United as opposed to what Solskjaer wanted in the future?
I think it suited both parties, to be honest. I mean, Lukaku said a couple of months before the end of that 2018-19 season that he felt he wanted to leave. But I think he wanted to leave because he wasn't in the team every week. He wasn't guaranteed a starting role under Solskjaer. And as good as he'd been for two seasons, you know, he scored about one every two games for United. There was a sense he didn't really fit under Solskjaer, that he didn't have the fitness to play in the way United wanted. I think, in fairness to Lukaku, he's probably proved that judgment incorrect at Inter Milan. But I think there was definitely a feeling that he wasn't Solskjaer's man, and he wasn't the type of centre-forward Solskjaer wanted. You know, Solskjaer was very critical towards the end of that half season he had in terms of the effort he was seeing from certain players without naming them. He was very critical. They lost 4-0 at Everton at Goodison Park in that season, and he was very vocal in his post-match press conference in saying, I'm going to be a success here, and some players simply aren't going to be a part of it. And I think that the transfer business that summer probably indicated who he was talking about. And I think there was just a sense that, you know, Lukaku's face didn't fit for him in how he wanted to play. He wanted aggressive and quick centre-forwards on the counter-attack, which I think he felt Lukaku couldn't do at that time. Lukaku certainly improved in that regard under Conte at Inter Milan, but you know, Conte wanted Lukaku at Chelsea as well, and I think that the system Conte plays is an absolutely perfect fit for Lukaku, and I think that if there's any manager in the world that's going to get the best out of him, it's Conte. And I think Solskjaer just felt that long term he wasn't his man, so I think it was one of those in that summer where the player felt it was time to move on, and the manager felt it was probably time for the player to move on too.
All right, Thursday, Manchester United takes on Inter Milan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's a great matchup in the Europa League. Maybe a little insight from you on it.
Yeah, it's a Europa League tie-in, Champions League clothing, I guess, isn't it? It's definitely one you'd expect in the Champions League, two of Europe's biggest hitters. And we were talking about this yesterday at the MEN, and there's kind of similarities, I guess, between the two teams, and that they've both gone through, you know, real trouble over the last sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe both fallen down the league from what they'd expect. Probably are the two biggest clubs in their league, both on the way back and looking like they're going to finish second this year, but see their City rivals win the league. So you can definitely see similarities. I think it'd be an interesting game. I think Zlatan's a doubt, if not ruled out, for the Old Trafford game, which is a shame. But at the same time, you know, he never really got a proper goodbye at Old Trafford. And I think to have returned to an empty Old Trafford would have probably made it worse, if anything. The fans loved him when he was there, and if it had played, it would have been a real shame that there was no crowd there. So I think it's a really interesting game. Like we say, not a Europa League tie at all. United are struggling a bit with injuries at the moment. AC Milan have dropped away a little bit in Serie A, but I think it's a really tough game to call, and I can see it being two really close legs.
Yeah, looking forward to that one as well. All right, let's switch gears, Tyrone, to Manchester City. You know, every time Pep Guardiola loses or draws, it's like a state of panic, and you know, here are the fallibilities of City, and, you know, they can be beaten on any given day, just like any other soccer team, by the way. Yeah, okay. So just talk a little bit about Pep now. And people questioning his tactics and all these things, it just seems to be the norm always when there's a blemish that comes from City.
Yeah, I think so. There's, you know, every team, the dialogue and the narrative around every team is always stronger when they're in crisis, really. And the issue for City is that they are never really in crisis. So all it takes is one defeat, and it brings up headlines and how do you improve? But the fact is they'd won 21 games in a row in all competitions before. And to have done that this season when, you know, that we've had fixtures every 3 days because of the pandemic and the delayed start to the season, and City had, you know, a week of pre-season training, to have come into this season and produced what they've done, I think has been absolutely incredible and possibly Pep's greatest achievement. I felt at the start of the season that this was going to be a new test for him, really. He'd hit the ground running and won with teams at City, Bayern Munich and Barcelona, but he'd never really had a team that he'd built to success that had then struggled and he'd almost had to rebuild. And that was the challenge this season. And at the start of the season, they had some uncertain results. They lost 5-2 to Leicester, and it did feel like this was kind of, you know, his legacy was always secure, but this was something he hadn't done before in building another great team. And you know, the way he's done it, I think, has proved his genius, proved that he does belong in the conversation as one of the greatest ever managers. And they've done it, you know, they've produced this 21-game winning run with limited contribution from Gabriel Jesus and no contribution at all from Sergio Aguero. And there's no doubt they're going to be in the market for a striker this summer. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they signed Haaland. And, you know, I think if you throw Haaland into that Manchester City team, then they are a truly frightening prospect. And the fact that you can see such an obvious upgrade in terms of striker, Jesus is a good player, but he's probably not on the level and not on the consistent level that City require. You put a world-class striker in that team, and I think you're looking at one hell of a football team in maybe next season and the season after.
How much credit does Pep get for shoring things up defensively, you know, with both signings and kind of reviving John Stones, who I thought John Stones actually was very, very good against United?
Yeah, a huge amount of credit. And he's kind of done it in two stages this season, in that they really shored up defensively at the start of the season after that loss to Leicester. And it kind of meant they sacrificed a bit of attacking play in getting better defensively. It's interesting to look at the derby, going into this game at Old Trafford when it finished 0-0. and both teams were pretty dour and pretty defensive that day. And you look in the 3 months since, and it felt like United were still a team capable of producing drab nil-nils, while City were now, you know, one of the great entertainers in the league again. So he certainly shored up defensively. You know, it's funny that Ruben Diaz was probably the third choice centre half last summer. And in the end, you know, you look at him now and he probably should have been first choice. He's been absolutely magnificent, a real leader and vocal leader. And as we say, his partnership with Stones is absolutely brilliant. They know each other so well. Stones' return to form has been incredible, because I think most people thought he was finished at City. In the end, he's edged out Laporte. So, it's huge credit to Guardiola. They possibly got a bit lucky with Diaz, in terms of they did want him, but he was, you know, they'd went for Koulibaly and Jules Koundé beforehand. So maybe a little degree of fortune with that. But, you know, they are excellent defensively now. And it's certainly, it's ended this debate about whether, you know, Guardiola can coach defences and get the best out of defences, because the unit at Manchester City is fantastic at the moment.
Tyrone Marshall, senior football writer for the Manchester Evening News. All right, they've got Southampton tomorrow, but let's talk about the big picture. I mean, this really is all about winning the Champions League, right? I mean, that's why Pep Guardiola was brought there. Is it all about that?
I wouldn't say it was all about that, but I think if he was to leave in a couple of years and they hadn't won it, then he would certainly be disappointed. I think he knows he is judged solely on the Champions League. I mean, the fact is he's going to win his third title in 4 years this year. He could well win a fourth next year in the Premier League. And they've rewritten the record books with what it takes to win a title in England with the number of points they've got. So, you know, it's difficult to judge his success as his reign as anything other but a success given that. But, you know, there's no doubt the Champions League is the one he wants, the one the owners want. They look well placed to go for it this year, but if anything, the United defeat probably shows kind of why they haven't won it in the last few years, in that they do feel vulnerable to these games where things just don't click for them, where they don't take their chances. Like we say, Jesus isn't a consistent enough finisher. Aguero's had a rotten season with injuries and looks like he's coming to the end of his time there. So, you know, that's the risk with the Champions League, that it only takes one bad day, as they had against Lyon last year, and it can be all over for you. And I think this kind of showed that there's still that concern for Guardiola and City, that they could have another one of those days in the remainder of the competition. You'd certainly think they'd finish the job against Borussia Mönchengladbach now. And it does feel like this is perhaps the year that they can do it, but then we say that every year. But, you know, you wouldn't expect, I mean, Bayern Munich are probably their biggest rivals for it. You wouldn't think Liverpool will find the form to go far. Obviously, Paris Saint-Germain have got a chance, but Barcelona are going to go out. Real Madrid are not the same team they used to be. Borussia Dortmund feel vulnerable given their form in the Bundesliga. So it does, you know, I think it would be a surprise if Bayern Munich or Manchester City didn't win it. So you have to say that it does feel like a real opportunity for City this year.
Are you a believer in the timely loss? Because that's obviously something that's being brought up here with the United result over City here a couple days ago. Are you a believer in that? Is that a good reboot at this moment for Guardiola and City?
I suppose time will tell, really, in how they recover from it. You know, like we say, for the narrative of the Premier League season, it's not going to make any difference. They're still going to win that league title. I think they will be annoyed that they didn't get the record. They were close to, I think the record is 26 or 27 successive wins at a European league by a Welsh team called TNS, and City were closing in on that. And, you know, while they play down records, I don't think there's any doubt that as a team and as a manager, they would have wanted that. So they will be annoyed that is over. You know, I don't think there's a lot that they will have learned from the game at the weekend that they didn't already know. You know, the penalty was a rash tackle from a striker. And then the second goal was probably just a good move and an incisive move from United. The biggest issue was that City have days where they miss big chances and haven't got that world-class striker to dig them out of a hole. So I don't think they'll have learned much from it that they didn't already know. I guess whether it proves to be a timely loss, time will tell. They should certainly get back on the horse against Southampton this week. And what they need is to find that consistency again if they're going to go far in the Champions League.
Not sure I want to be Southampton coming into this game tomorrow. By the way, you know, it's pretty amazing how we discount what they have achieved in the Premier League, you know, because we go directly to the Champions League, like I just did with the question to you. Mm-hmm. But it's just remarkable when you look statistically at the results, the goals, all the data. It's unbelievable how dominant they've been.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. You know, like I said, they've rewritten what it takes to win the league. They won it with 100 points. They won it with 98. I mean, Liverpool have to win it with 99 this year. They're probably going to get 90s again this season. You know, back in January when United went top, there was a feeling that this was an unpredictable season and that no team was going to string wins together, and you might be able to win the league with 82, 83 points this year, in which case United might have been in it. But City's form, to have won 15 straight Premier League games in this season of all seasons, when you play in every 3 days, has been absolutely phenomenal. And it suggests that, like I say, you're going to need 95-plus points to win the league again this season. And that's the problem for Liverpool achieved it. That's the problem that United are looking at. But that means to win a league, you're going to have to win probably 31, 32 of your 38 games. And that is an incredible level of consistency. And, you know, City have moved the bar in Premier League terms of what it takes to win the league. And, you know, I think they deserve immense credit for that. But like you say, it is the narrative of this project is that it's all about the Champions League. So as soon as the Premier League is won or done and dusted, we're talking about Europe and whether it'll be a failure if it doesn't happen. Winning the Champions League is incredibly hard. Like you say, one bad day can end it for you. And City as a team, as good as they are probably a team that does have one bad day in them. So the challenge is to kind of make sure that doesn't happen in Europe. And this year could be the year. And it'd be interesting to see whether, you know, there's always been this accusation that Guardiola overthinks it in Europe. He changed the system last year when they played Lyon in a 1-0 game when, you know, Lyon, I think, had finished 7th or 8th in France. And Manchester City are making changes to accommodate Lyon. And it felt at the time like it was just not something that should be happening, really, that City should just play their own game. But I think they've developed such a good system this year and such a belief in their defensive unity that I don't think that will happen. And even if they played Bayern Munich, I think Guardiola would stick with, you know, the 4-3-3 with the same players, with having Gundogan and De Bruyne or Bernardo and De Bruyne pushed on as attacking midfielders. So I think the level of consistency they've found and the defensive solidity they've found will probably mean that he doesn't overthink it this year, and there'll be no accusations of that, and that might well help City in the Champions League.
Tyrone, exceptional as usual, a real treat for my listeners. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Continued success covering both United and City, and thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thanks, Glenn. Not a problem at all.
All right. He's the one and only Tyrone Marshall, straight from Manchester. That segment brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. We'll take a break. We have more to come.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.